Hello everybody, it's a pleasure to be with you all today. My name is Anne van Maurik and I will be the host of this episode of the NEOD Rewind podcast on war and violence. Today we speak about the brand new book, Revolutionary Worlds, Local Perspectives and Dynamics During the Indonesian Independence War, 1945-1949, which has been edited by Bambang Purwanto, Roel Fracking, Abdul Wahid, Jerry van Klinken, Martijn Eickhoff, Julianti and Irene Hogeboom. The book analyzes the Indonesian Revolution from local and regional perspectives and is written by a research collective of historians coming both from the Netherlands and Indonesia. And the book is part of a larger project which is named Independence, Decolonization, Violence and War in Indonesia, 1945-1950. So I speak about the book with three of its editors. First of all, I would like to introduce Julianti, who is a lecturer in the Department of History, Faculty of Cultural Science at the Universitas Gadjah Mada, or UGM, in Yogyakarta, Indonesia. Then we have here at the table Abdul Wahid, who is head of the Department of History, and he is also a lecturer at the Faculty of Cultural Science at UGM. And last but not least, Roel Fracking, who is a lecturer in Political History in the Department of History and Art History at the University of Utrecht. So welcome, everybody. I'm really glad that you're here, and I'm thrilled to have you all on the podcast. And first of all, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Wahid. I have the book here in front of me, and it contains two interesting pictures. The first one is on the cover of the book, and the second is a painting which is on the inside of the cover. Can you describe them for us, and what do these pictures say about the book?
Okay, thank you for the question. Actually, the cover of the book, the front side and the inside, is a collective decisions we made as an editors. So the first one, the cover in the front, is taken from a photograph. There's a explanations about the photograph, but inside, the cover inside is a paintings of Sujoyono. These two picture and painting, we selected based on the considerations that it can really use to depict or to give a glimpse idea about the content of the book itself.
Yeah. So I see Indonesian people.
Indeed, this is about the period of war. We really want to show that during the war there are many elements in it and many peoples in it. There are women there, there are kids, there are, you know, ordinary peoples like maybe a rural people, peasants from the rural area. And then, of course, fighters inside cover. We think that these two pictures can be really best used to give an idea, actually, to reflect the content of the books, but also the intentions that we want to introduce with the book, yeah. Namely the multiplicity, the complexity of the revolution period in the Indonesian Independent War.
Yeah. And we also see this, so we on the front,
yes,
we see...
Yes, graffiti there.
Yeah, exactly.
You can translate it as it is. So our main objective is to be freedom, to get our independence, being Merdeka.
Yeah.
But then there's also another graffiti on the right side, and Soekarno-Hatta, yes, and Panmuk Pandan Plus, no. So it's really, you know, like telling actually the contrast situation at the time on political level. Of course, from the Republican perspective, Sukarno and Hatta is our leader, but there is also another power coming, which is led by Panmuk and Pandan Plus. And for the message is not to say for Indonesian people to accept this new authority or the new incoming colonial power, perhaps.
Well, yeah, it's a beautiful picture, both also the painting, and I think it beautifully shows indeed the central point that there are so many different groups involved in this war,
yeah.
Right? Roel, let's talk about the name of the book. So it's called Revolutionary Worlds, Local Perspectives and Dynamics During the Indonesian Independence War, 1945-1949. Can you tell me about these revolutionary worlds, local perspectives and dynamics? Why this title?
Well, the whole idea of these revolutionary worlds actually came from the discussions over time which we had within the research group. We felt that we needed to step away from a model which has sometimes been referred to analytically as the franchise model. And this model basically dictates or seemingly depicts the power of the republic emanating from Jakarta first and then from later from Yogyakarta as being equal everywhere, which is kind of an unrealistic look if you want to talk about local dynamics and differences of the revolutionary period. Because as you all know, Indonesia is a vast, vast country. And therefore, the power of the republic couldn't have been present everywhere in equal measure. So with that in mind, we started to think about revolution in the plural sense. And then we started to dig deeper. And then we thought about, well, if we want to incorporate local perspectives and dynamics, we need to start looking at how different individuals, different groups, but also political parties and indeed representatives of the republic and their fighters, but also agents of empire, but also the Dutch administrators, how they all basically interpreted what this revolution was about. And by doing so and giving expression to interpretations of freedom and independence, how they also individually, but also collectively in relation to each other, gave shape to multiple revolutions, if you will. That, of course, in the end, all added up to a specific endpoint. So this is why we spoke in the plural about revolutionary worlds.
Yeah, yeah. And these worlds also existed both locally and nationally, right? And that has to do with these dynamic character of the revolution again, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, to give you an example from my own chapter about South Sulawesi, is what you see is that we have these local regional dynamics between the incoming Dutch colonial power or supposed power in relation to local elites, which were ancient in a way, on the one hand, and the third leg of that triangle are the freedom fighters and the Bermuda and so on and so forth. And when you look at on a local and regional perspective, they're all engaged in this power struggle with each other. But at the same time, over their shoulder is this republic looking in. So there's representatives of the republic who don't necessarily agree with, well, of course, not with the Dutch, but also not with local elites, but also sometimes with Bermuda. And you see that the power of the republic coming from Jakarta is not always trusted as such, because sometimes they feel like, okay, we don't want too much of an influence here in South Sulawesi coming from the republic.
Julianti, Revolutionary Worlds is the product of a collaboration between the Indonesian Research Project, Proclamation of Independence, Revolutionary and War in Indonesia from UGM, and the Dutch Research Group of the Regional Studies Project. So Julianti, can you please elaborate on the Indonesian participation within the project? Why was it interesting for Indonesian researchers to work on this project?
Okay, thank you, Anne. I think when we are talking about the Indonesian participation in this, I think is the first thing that we would like to say is that we have 10 researchers actually included in the books. All of them are actually coming from different universities in Indonesia, and also geographically they are from different areas in Indonesia, and they are also composed of different scholars, like included the young scholars, which I think the UGM as the coordinator of this project were really working very good in bringing them all together. And in terms of our scholars from Indonesia, they are working from they're working on different topics and also different regions, which I can mention. Some of them are working on the Sumatra and then also Sulawesi and also Jawa and the revolutionary capital like Yogyakarta and also West Jawa, which is quite interesting, and it's able to show the local dynamics of the revolution period in Indonesia. And in addition to that, I think what is important is the new perspective that this Indonesian researchers are able to bring and presented in our books about the new perspective in seeing the revolution period in Indonesia, and that it is not only focused on the same focus what in what the Dutch society might be also just focused, for example, the violence. So we bring a more discussion and also a perspective which is more a local, it shows a local dynamic.
Yeah, very clear. So it was, in a sense, also a good opportunity to learn more about this crucial period in Indonesian, both for Dutch scholars and Indonesian scholars, Roel.
Well, what Julie Janti said made me think about one of the major contributions, I think, to the book, which could have only happened because of this integration of Dutch and Indonesian historians, is that, again, one of the major findings of this book is that in many cases, what we always considered as the revolution being very much some sort of reaction or a preemption of the return of the Dutch, in many cases, we found that actually the revolutionary period had sometimes very little to do with whatever it is that the Dutch were doing. And this is a perspective I feel that is specifically underlined in this book and that directly stems from the way we cooperated with each other and had an integrated research group, yeah. which you know, challenged each other to find new inroads into material that's been covered in many times.
Yeah, thank you, Roel. It's a nice bridge to the next topic. Because what you actually mentioned is that the two historiographies were separate before this research, or largely separate. Let's talk a bit more about this. Until now, Dutch and Indonesian historiographies have remained separated, with the Dutch predominantly focusing on the violent nature of de- or recolonization, as Julianti also mentioned. Wahid, please take a minute to briefly tell us about the character of Indonesian historiographyy.
Well, thank you, Anne, for the questions. Yes, actually, it links with the previous questions, also what Julie has mentioned. The motivations that we are Indonesian researcher want to join this research, it's because this is really a good opportunity also for us to revisit, to restudy and re-examine this very important period. Well, I'm saying this is a very important period because for Indonesian in general, this period has been seen as a formative period of our Indonesian nation state. So the revolution in that sense, it's really like, you know, the sacred period. And for so long, actually, the writing, historical writing about this period is very much dominated by the state narrative or the government agency. Well, of course, there are some individual works, but also international works about the period. But for Indonesians, the period is very, very important period. As I said, is the basis or the foundations for the nation state of Indonesia today. And for that reason, I think, and especially so during the New Orders era, the government really pay attention and then giving their support to produce a national narrative, so to say. And then this is really very much like emphasizing heroism, the role of military, for example, and then the big men, like our national heroes, like Soekarno, Hatta, Syahrir, etc., etc. And that become a dominant narrative in Indonesia. So, of course, as we know already, and earlier Roel has already mentioned, the revolutionary period is a very complex period. It's multi-layer realities there. So indeed, there are political dispute and then military conflict between Indonesia and the Netherlands. But underneath, Indonesian society is very heterogeneous, politically, ideologically, religiously, but ethnicity, language, etc., etc. So of course, you know, the political process happening then could be very different regionally, geographically, but also according along the interest of this different group of society. Of course, that for that reason, perhaps in the past, the Indonesian government really want to give a really big idea that this is actually about how we defending the independence. And then in which the role of, you know, fighters, militarism is very important. And then it was produced and reproduced in cultural productions, but also in historical textbooks. So this period is only about how to defend the independence of Indonesia that has been declared by Soekarno and Hatta in 17 August. And, not really ignoring, but putting behind actually the complexities of societal process and what was going on actually on the grassroots level in different layers, in different areas of Indonesia, which is very vast and have very different regional conditions. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I think, the great loophole in Indonesian historiography, because previously, and I think until today, it's so dominant, emphasizing the role of the big men and the military, of course, and then the heroic events and things like that. and as a my narrative in Indonesia. Yeah. Did I answer it?
Yeah, correctly? Of course. Yeah, it shows actually that both the Indonesians or the Indonesian historiography as well as the Dutch has its blind spots, and this book aims to breach these boundaries between both historiographies. Does any of you have an example of what are one of the discussions about what you learned by this collaboration? I remember myself that, because I was in the larger research group as well, that there was this Dutch point of view about decolonization. But after collaborating with Indonesian scholars, there were all these ideas about recolonization, for example.
Let me first start by saying that our project, of course, isn't the only project in which Indonesian and Dutch scholars have worked together in this way, nor are we the only project that critically engage with or even circumvents the issues that surround the decolonization predicate and terminology. So in the Netherlands, we always, and elsewhere as well, obviously, we think about such periods of national revolutions or independence war in terms of decolonization. If you apply that very specifically to the Indonesian independence war, this calling it decolonization has connotations which are not rooted in reality, if you will, in historical reality. Indonesia was an independent country in August 1945. Because, you know, Sukarno and Hatto had proclaimed it so. And in that sense, if you come in and speak about decolonization, you kind of imply that the Dutch colonial government had business, almost like literal business, in Indonesia at the time. Maybe from an international law perspective, that was the case at the time. But if you come in from a more open perspective, like we have, you immediately come to the conclusion that thinking in terms of decolonization, with all its implications in terms of what Indonesia was at that time and what the Dutch did there, it doesn't make sense in terms of historical reality.
Yeah, maybe to add a little bit to what Roland has described, from our perspective, we do not recognize the term itself, decolonization, and we don't use it in our historiography, because it implies that things are really coming from the Netherlands, or everything is just the Netherlands as the center, you know, of the narrative. And actually the fact that Sukarno-Hatta, our national leaders, proclaim independence, that's the most important standpoint from Indonesian perspective, regardless, for example, international law or current debate about it. But that's really the historical realities. So and another thing is the fact that actually effort to colonial things in Indonesia has started long before that. I mean, trying to detach Indonesian people, trying to detach from whatever colonial it was, is with, of course, the core idea is being independent. It has been going on much earlier.
Thank you for this, Vahid. Another point I would like to talk about is the regional approach of the book. This approach as a point of departure, that's also quite uncommon, right?
Yeah, I think this is very important, just because this cooperation actually gives that opportunity to our Indonesian researchers to dig up the sense of locality of the revolutionary. This research brings, for example, the daily life of the people that were actually existed during the period studied. So like the Chinese society in Padang, which is studied by our colleague Aniwati. And also, I think most importantly, is one research about women, which I think it's over a new perspective in seeing the revolution period in Indonesia at the time. So Galuh dealt that very nicely, and she shows that the revolution, the role, she doesn't only deal with the role of women in the kitchen, but she was over the discussion about the women on the level of intellectuals. So the discussion was on the level of what this independence means to women. So it is not only about the role of women in the kitchen and offering food for the fighters, but it was the intellectual discussion that actually grew among the women at that period of time. So I think this is really good. And additionally, I think this chapter also means a new perspective that should be a standard of historiography in Indonesia, or in specifically when we are talking about revolutionary period, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it sort of dismantles the idea that there was only one revolution, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Roel, the book covers the period 1945-1950. Tell me, why doesn't it capture the longer period, including Dutch colonial occupation of Indonesia?
Well, as we've amply covered, I do think that zooming in on this period has a lot of merits. We've brought out a lot of intricacies that previously were maybe not so prominent elsewhere. But then there is a downside to this focusing on this relatively short period of time. What it does, in a way, is that it diverts attention to, away, as you said, from longer trajectories of Dutch oppression in Indonesia. And on the other hand, it also obscures a little bit, like Wahid just introduced, this idea that, of course, the nationalist movements and thereby the revolution didn't come from nowhere. These had very long prehistories. I would say that taking on board this long perspective would be able to correct this limited vision on where the revolution came from and what the nationalist movement was about and its intricacies. But also, I feel that taking on longer perspectives would also reveal that, you know, outside this full-on war, Dutch violence was very ubiquitous, transgressive, and many times disproportionate. And more importantly, if you only look at the revolutionary period, it might feel that this Dutch violence was isolated event. But if you take on longer perspective, long durée perspective, you might see that actually the violence was not only that, but it was also every day. Like, people had to deal with this on Indonesian and other communities had to deal with this on a daily basis. And that kind of violence looks very different, I feel, than this violence that we've now covered mostly. And then another point is here that by looking at this period, we often, but not only, look at military and exploits and the actions of administrators on the Dutch side of things. But if you take on board a longer perspective, you can get a bigger picture of the full span of this Dutch subjugation of the archipelago. Because then you would also come to look at planters and bankers and the role that ordinary Europeans, if you will, played as well. So then you would reveal the endemic racism and inequalities, social, economic, political, of the entirety of this colonial system. This would also reveal how important the nationalist movement already was in the 1920s, for example.
Thank you. Yeah, options for new research. That's a good thing to hear. Giulianti, last year the conclusions of the larger research project about Dutch violence in Indonesia during 1945-49, it triggered debates, mainly in the Netherlands, I reckon, about the absence of the term war crimes. And some critics argue that this absence would, for example, mitigate the idea of Dutch perpetratorship. Giulianti, what do you think of this debate, and was this also a topic in Indonesia?
Okay, we want to give a more broad perspective about what happened during the revolutionary war and not just focusing on the violence itself. So I think that is the one thing that we would like to emphasize on our project. And the absence of the war crimes, I think we will just leave it to the audience to actually interpret it or read it after reading our books.
Wahid, do you have anything to add about this?
Yeah, I think if the reader is really going through the books, they can find cases, actually, maybe it can be termed as a war crime, but we don't want to go into that directions because this is historical research, this is production of historical research, so it will leave it moral judgment or political judgment to the audience or to people outside our works. Actually, that's something also we want to avoid, because in Indonesian nationalist historiography, that's also have been obvious. All this, perpetratorship, Dutch perpetratorship, is always there, and it can easily find in our monuments, in our public spaces, but also in movies, for example, something like that. So it's not really new, actually, to Indonesian audience, but to what extent it can be taken into political scenes or legal aspect, that's not really our focus.
And one more question about this. Did the discussion, the Dutch discussion about the terminology on war crimes, did that reflect it back in any way in Indonesian society? Were Indonesians perhaps, for example, surprised that the larger research project didn't conclude in these kinds of words? Or was this just not an Indonesian topic at all?
As far as I know so far, I think public discussion is not really going into that direction. There are some circle in our society who are very critical, saying I'm going into that directions, but it's not really become like a public debate in Indonesia. Yeah. Even like the apology from the Prime Minister, for example. Well,
yeah, which happened right after the the project showed its conclusions.
Yeah, we don't really see a public debate in Indonesia about that. Although, yeah, there are some, you know, discussion. I mean, I was invited to in several meetings, but in general...
What kind of meetings?
Well, seminar.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, yeah. not meeting. Seminar or a conference.
So scientific. Yeah,
scientific. Yeah, scientific. It was discussed, but but not really like becoming like public discourse in Indonesia. Mm. I don't know why. There's maybe another thing as a research agenda for the coming years.
Why this is.
Just taking up what Wahid just said, I also feel that, you know, if you focus only on war crimes, those are very specific types of violence, you tend to focus on that, whereby you maybe put out of focus other instances of violent interactions, but also very different interactions that Julie said were equally important that perhaps had nothing to do with war crimes.
And what do you mean? Do you have an example of this?
Well, for example, how, you know, because one of the things, if you talk about war crimes, you immediately see the Indonesians at the receiving end as victims. And with this book, we also tried to show that people were survivors, in fact, and there is a difference in that, right? So, one example would be how the Chinese in Medan, like Anna van der Veer writes about, or how these Indian communities in Sumatra, or just other Indonesians, how they basically found a way to either to survive. And so we also tried to show that. So what did people actually do in order to flee from the violence or mitigate its effect in different ways? So that's, if you look at war crimes only, then maybe that gets, you know, diminished or left out. Why we just want to say that that's equally important.
Yeah, you focus more on how violence works in an interaction with an whole society, with all different groups, instead of labeling something, yes, this is a war crime or no.
Yeah, and lastly, again, as was said before, the book is rife with examples of war crimes, if you will. Or, I mean, one example is that this, admittedly from the 1970s, a biography of division, an Indonesian division, basically talks about one instance of Dutch violence as a war crime because they refer directly to the Geneva Conventions. So, yeah, again, those events are in the book as well.
If I may to
add
a bit, because if we focus so much on the war crimes, then for Indonesia we have also a difficulties. I mean, of course, then we tend to locate or to point out that the war crimes always the Dutch, which is then it's only part of the story. Because if you look at the grassroots on the realities, it's multiple violence there happening. I mean, and we can single out not only the Dutch, for example, who did the crime, who did the violent things, but also some of Pemuda, some Indonesians fighter as well. And we will find a very difficulty to accept it or to understand it. So you see, the complexity between the term itself, if we use the term, it's becoming, you know, like we'll go into a moralistic judgment and even like, well, legalistic point of view. Well, but with this book, we're just trying to approach things in social broader context. So, well, violence part of the story, part of the realities, right? And then the most important thing is how this violence affected society at the time. And then to what extent, for example, society was responding that, and then, you know, trying to get out that and then find their own solution, their own place, and their safety, for example. That's much important for us, according to at least to me, and but also I think I always share the same perspective with my colleagues.
Yeah, you all just beautifully explained, I think, how you have a really open approach to this revolution and to this conflict and to this violence. Last question, which is actually about another topic, but it has to do with this, of course. Vahid and Gilianti, you both composed also an anthology in Dutch named Onze Revolutie, which is translated as Our Revolution, which contains a selection of older Indonesian articles on the revolution. And yeah, they're now translated in Dutch for the first time. Please tell us about your hopes, what this book can bring a Dutch audience.
The book came out as a side project after we are having these intense discussions for this revolutionary war. It is then agreed, especially among our Dutch colleagues, that they need a kind of picture how actually the revolution has been written by Indonesian historians, but also by Indonesian intellectuals. For that reason, we found it very important also to introduce the history of historical writings of Indonesian historiography about the revolutions.
The Bloemlezing, the Onze Revolutie, is a book that offers a background and also a context and introduction to the revolutionary period in Indonesia. And I think it's really a perfect accompanying book for reading the revolutionary world, you know, for the broader audience. So I think these two books, I think, is made it inseparable, I think. What is offering a broad context of the Indonesian revolutionary and also the introductory. And then after that, we zoom into different cases of revolution in Indonesia. I think please read the book, like these two books, I think are very important, whether you are an academic and also an enthusiast of history and also just an audience.
Gilianti, Vahid and Roel, thank you for being here and for this thought-provoking conversation. We've talked about how to see the revolution as a multifaceted event which was shaped by many different groups with different goals, ideologies and practicalities. And yeah, thank you for this, for illuminating us on your work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having listened to this podcast. As one of the editors of this book, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank my fellow editors, Professor Bambang Purwanto, Professor Jer van Klinken, Professor Martijn Eickhoff, and of course, Irene Hogenboom, and Taufik as our wonderful translator. And now that I have your attention still, I would like to also by name, mention all the authors, of course, without whom we could have never finished this book. So we begin with Galu, and then of course we have Farabi, Muhammad, and Martijn and Gerry again, who also authored for this book, Julianto, Annelot Hoek, of course, Sarkawi, Taufik, Ahmad, Tri, Mawardi, Anne van der Veer, Ernie Watti, and last but certainly not least, Apriani. Again, thank you all for this wonderful project.